So, welcome back, everybody. Yes, thank you. Sorry, it's like steamrolled over your welcome.
It's okay. Welcome.
So, let's talk briefly just about thoughts on the game, what you guys thought overall. We'll get into some specifics in a minute, but thoughts on the game now that we're completed?
Can you really call this a game?
Yes, because they throw in the little dodging things game. So that's
the platformer again. Yeah,
like it's to me this felt less of a game than Life is Strange was.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like it was the same exact format.
Yeah, I mean, you had puzzles to solve, and you had to find hidden things in the environment. That's a puzzle game.
Yeah, Last of Us, Life is Strange seemed to be more interactive.
Really?
And not as heavily linear as To the Moon.
I think if you don't call this a game, you're not calling a lot of games now. Because there's a lot of them like this, like, you know, walking simulators that are mostly about story.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I'm not knocking the game for it. It's just, to me, it felt like a really good interactive story.
Yeah.
You know,
I think there was just enough, like, actual interaction and thinking required from you to qualify it as a game. Not a ton, but just enough.
Yeah.
I will tend to lean a little bit more towards what Kristan is saying, though, because I think that on some level, I do agree. I'm actually kind of not crazy about this, like, influx of walking around games that are coming out now. I mean, I don't really get it. I like to interact, and I like to be, you know, engaged. And these games are very, like, here, just walk around and enjoy my pretty graphics, you know? I didn't feel like that was this kind of game, but I can see where he's going with it. I mean, I was less interacting, but I felt like I was gripped by the story. I couldn't put it down. I wouldn't even think about that.
Yeah, it was hard for me to stop at Act 1.
I didn't.
I know, I heard.
Thank you, Blasted, right on through.
Okay. I think that's totally fine as long as you're willing to not spoil things.
And you know, the thing too is that the beginning of the game did kind of drag on and start to get a little repetitive. It's like, okay, well, like, how many times are we going to make a jump? How many times do we have to do this? It's like, okay, I get it. But in the other sense, it was, I'm really enjoying the story. I want to keep going. Mm-hmm. This is really what's keeping me interested.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was a harsh critic. No, I agree to some extent. I'm just.
Did anyone cry? Like I did?
I didn't, only because I cried the first time I played it a few years ago. But since I knew it was coming, okay. I didn't cry this time at the ending. I cried earlier in the game this time.
Yeah. Okay.
I will say that there were points where I definitely got choked up, for sure. Sure.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a giant smush anyway. That's just what I'm told. That's what I'm told anyway. I like to think otherwise. But I think that what did it for me was that very end scene with that flat line. Like when they're literally flying to the moon. Like that was it. I was just like done with the world. I didn't cry. Like I wasn't like, you know,
just emotionally
my eyes out. But yeah, I was like yeah, it just really hit close to home, and I was like, "Wow, this is powerful." So,
to me, I got a little teared up when they met the first time as kids. After they got on the spaceship and everything, I was fine.
You're fine.
Yeah.
You heartless scum. Call yourself.
Teach his own. Teach his own.
I think throughout, you just kind of relate at different spots. You know, it's just depending on. I think it really depends on maybe what you've been through in your own life. I mean, I think I related a lot to the doubt that Johnny sort of felt throughout his life, like just the doubt and the fears and like the sense of responsibility and the sense of like, you know, I'm going to fail and I'm going to fail my wife. Like that's not that I've ever had a wife, but I can imagine like, I know what he's going through on some level, you know?
And I think that's a big difference. I think that's part of what makes this game so special is that, like, there's not just one aspect of it to relate to. Like, you don't have to relate to every single aspect of it to still be getting something really great out of it.
Yeah.
There's going to be something in it that touches you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. All right, well, without further ado, why don't we move into the discussion? Steph, you want to kick it off?
Sure. Let's see. The doctors make specific moves to change John's desires in his earlier memories so he will fulfill his wish to go to the moon. Like, they go back and change, like, the posters, I think, in the school, or was it the movie theater, to say, like, moon travel. And do you think that making something like this possible would be an easy task? Or do you think that changing one thing in an earlier memory, like seeing a poster to go to the moon, would change a life so drastically?
I think just one thing wouldn't be enough, but a cumulative, like, if they change, you know, a boatload of memories with little details, you know, it eventually adds up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with the exploration of recent stuff of, like, the butterfly effect, it's, you know, it's pretty hard to pick out a single moment.
Yeah.
It's going to have, a lot of potential impact in many directions, as you can see from some of the other games. It's like, it's not always that predictable that just putting a poster up in a movie theater is going to make them want to go to the movie.
Right.
Well, then, too, it's like also the moral aspect of it. And that's what I was kind of feeling as well, where you're paid to do a job, but is it necessarily the right thing to do?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the guy's on his deathbed and everything, so you want to make him happy, but on the other end, it's like, are there any ramifications to this in the future for yourself or for others? So, you know, it's kind of it's a weird, weird topic.
Yeah.
Did any of you play the, like, little DLC minisode things?
No, but I want to. I saw them.
There's a DLC minisode? I didn't even know.
Yeah, they're free. It's called a holiday special. It does touch on the fact that they are protested as an organization, which is interesting.
Is it different doctors?
Yeah, there's like a whole company. There's like six or eight doctors. I don't remember how many, but
wow.
Yeah. And they have a little Christmas party. But there's a interesting story to it as well. I don't want to spoil that, but it is interesting, and two episodes, each a half hour long, so take an hour, play them, have fun.
Wow.
Yeah, I saw those come in. I didn't know what they were until later, but yeah, those look cool.
Yeah, I just dropped in a screenshot of the protesters, because it was like, whoa, that's interesting.
Oh my gosh! Wow, thanks for mentioning that, because I wouldn't have even noticed.
Yeah, there is moral implications outside of, you know, in the larger world that I assume will be explored in his next game.
Yeah, you probably have to download them, because I know when I started my game, it asked me if I wanted to start those automatically, so I'm guessing it came with my Humble Bundle or something.
Okay. Yeah, if you go into your Steam library and go to the game itself, it's under the DLC.
Oh, okay.
And it is free, so worth it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Awesome.
Let's talk about John's memory of his brother. Now, first of all, I want to ask if anybody saw that coming.
I didn't.
No.
No.
It was shortly before it was revealed that I started to suspect something wasn't as it seemed. I was starting to think, I don't remember, but there were certain things where I was starting to realize, okay, maybe the guy in the bed isn't Johnny, but then it wouldn't make any sense because we're in his head.
Yeah.
And so that didn't work out, but I was starting to catch on to something.
So intuitive.
Yeah, thank you. when they showed him get hit by the car, I was like, I said out loud, I was like, I saw this coming because I figured that there was a twin or something. I was on to something. I know what it was. So
yeah.
But let's talk about Joey a little bit. And there's one point in the game where who calls him Joey? Someone calls him Joey.
His mom calls him Joey.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So John's memory of his brother was erased and sort of stunted by the large amount of beta blockers that they talk about. I mean, what about this practice? Is it ethical? And I think we can ask a second part to that question, but maybe we just tackle that one first. I mean, how do you guys feel about that?
Ethical, I don't know.
Yeah. It's... I've taken high school psychology and stuff like that, and you read about some of these case studies and everything, and it's kind of like, okay, well, I can kind of see it in a way because, like, this kid is just absolutely traumatized, but there are better ways to deal with this than just trying to suppress the memories.
Yeah.
Well, and not to mention, I mean, there's also far more traumatic things that could have happened that maybe would have been more necessary for beta blockers. It's a horrible thing to see your brother hit by a car, but I mean, he was little. He probably would have gotten over it at some point, maybe with a little counseling.
I mean, as we see in the story, just because he forgets it, there doesn't mean that there's no trauma from this.
Exactly.
Like, he is affected by this for the rest of his life.
Yeah, and you can see it throughout with the fact that he starts to, like, you know, he likes the pickled olives, and he's like following after things that he didn't even like, you know? Did you guys get that too?
He kind of picks up on some of his brother's traits, you know? And I don't know if that's, and I'm sure that that's, you know, I mean, I don't know too many people who have lost siblings, you know, early on, but I'm sure that that's, you know, a little, you know, that you kind of, it's a way of keeping them alive, I'm sure.
Even subconsciously, because he clearly didn't remember. Yeah. I absolutely, I mean, we might touch on this later, I don't know, but I absolutely loved that whole reveal about the rabbit, you know.
It just
really addressed, like, desensitization, I guess.
Yeah.
Of the whole awesome trauma, you know, just like he couldn't remember what the heck, you know, and he was just like, what the heck? Why do you keep asking me this? You know,
that was one of the parts where I started crying because.
Yeah. How can you not?
I was like, oh my gosh, like that's what she's been trying to get him to see this entire time. Yeah. And he's just been kind of, you know, just completely overlooking it, maybe because of beta blockers, but, you know, just because of other things as well. And
it's heartbreaking.
It is. Talking about the beta blockers in general, just, you know, talking about psychology, whatever, if there was a way to plant synthetic memory or remove existing ones to help people cope with trauma and fears, do you think people would take advantage of this? And I beg the question, would you take advantage of this?
They would abuse
it. Think about the worst thing. Who would abuse it?
I've watched my fair share of sci-fi shows and movies, and this never goes well. It never ends up happy.
Well, I mean, we know that there's psychology and things out there that can help people cope, you know, like hypnotherapy and things like that, that help people suppress memories that might be traumatic. I mean, is it a form of treatment if you could remove the traumatic memory and have a person live a normal life?
If this is like a regular practice in this universe to just give beta blockers to people, maybe, you know, whenever something goes horribly wrong in their life, you know, be like, oh, well, here, they'll forget it. They'll just give them a bunch of beta blockers.
That's a good point. I don't know if it really ever talks about that, but
no, not in this one.
Yeah, certainly could be.
Well, it was also, what was it, Neil got pretty upset when he found out that they were withholding the information that he had the beta blockers.
Oh, yeah.
So it didn't seem like it was necessarily a standard practice in this universe.
True.
So
it's a good point.
I don't know if I would. I don't know if I would take advantage of that. I think there are certain memories. Like, I guess it depends on what it is. I mean, I don't have a lot of traumatic memories. I have a few, and they definitely haunt me sometimes. But they also kind of keep me in check and remind me of why I feel a certain way about something. You know, for like, so for instance, a death of a loved one. I won't get into the details, but we had some tragic family death years and years ago that was pretty awful, and I remember it like it was yesterday. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I would ever want that removed, even though it's painful.
Right.
You know? I don't know.
Yeah,
I think it. I was just going to say, but I guess they ask the question, like, okay, what if someone was abused? Horribly, horribly abused, and they just can't function like a normal person. Yeah. But if you took that memory away, they might be normal.
That's true. Again. Yeah.
What were you going to say, Franco?
It goes back to, I guess, the question, you know, it's part of what makes you you, and I would be really hesitant to remove that, because unpredictable results may occur, but it's I would think it's at least I've tried to come to the place where it's like it's better to try to work through it and try to understand it and try to you might not be successful, but it's part of you, so it's better to deal with it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what makes us, is it making us less human when you take away those memories? Probably. I mean, like Stanton said, we've seen this before in sci-fi movies. I mean, look at The Giver. That's a good example. You guys ever read that book or see that movie?
Yes, I read the book.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and I think you could kind of, I mean, you're looking back at the game and at John's behavior, you could almost kind of see that he was a little distant from like what was happening around him, I guess would be a way to say it.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely affected his life.
Yeah.
Like there was something missing from himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he definitely put a distance in between himself and the things going on around him, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else have any opinions on that?
I think it's a great sci-fi twist to Chris's theory is, you know, with the removal of memories, somebody write a book where, you know, you successfully remove one memory, but it sort of spreads like a virus and you start
losing
more and more memories and it's like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And, I mean, to speak to the abuse aspect of it, it's like the plot of Remember Me, where you can go in and you can hack people's memories and change their memories so that they believe they've murdered somebody and, you know, frame them through their own memories and that kind of thing. So that's the abuse possible through this kind of idea.
True. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, everybody would always find a way to use it for evil. But
Would
be used for treatment, perhaps. I mean, I don't know. I'm on the fence about it. I don't think that will ever exist.
Hypnosis. I mean,
well, I can see suppressing memories themselves, but not taking away a specific memory.
Right.
I don't know how you would even do that without, you know, that it would be really difficult to do.
Sci-fi.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, your mind kind of does it. Does it itself.
Exactly.
Sometimes,
if it's traumatic enough, you know, it you know, your brain will block that memory to protect you, but then,
or at least dull it.
Yeah, but then you know, there's something that could trigger the memory again, and then you're suffering even greater at that point.
True.
Yeah, like Franco said, I think it's important to deal with it. Then it can't be help, exactly. You know, it can't control you.
Yep.
Go ahead, Steph. Sorry.
That's okay. If everyone's got their thoughts, I'll move to the next question. after seeing how they function, would you hire a memory traversal agent to grant you a wish on your deathbed, a loved one's, or would you prefer to die with the memories you have, regardless of how sorrowful they may have been?
Yeesh, that's a tough one. I think it really depends on how unhappy with my life I feel at the end. But I mean, if it were today, when I'm overall relatively happy with my life, I would say no. I'd rather keep the life I have, flaws and all, and also I would rather the privacy aspect of it. See, it's strange to me. I want my life to have stayed just mine. Like, a lot of these memories, I kind of want to die with me. It's just something that's only special to me, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's such a double-edged sword. Well, the first problem I'd have is be on your deathbed. I'd like to do it now, please. Not wait until I'm ready to die. But let's say the best use I would think of it is a what-if scenario where it's like, what if I asked Peggy Sue out to the dance or something? You know, what if, or I chose to play this sport instead of this sport when I had a chance to play both. What would have happened in my life? But what if it turned out your life would have been great? How would you feel then? It's like, wow, I really screwed up, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think of this that way.
Well, you wouldn't even realize it, though.
Yeah.
I mean, especially if it happens the way in this game where it kind of just rewrites your entire life.
Well, see, that's what I was going to kind of just make note of just now, though, was that it's really not changing anything. It's just a memory, and he's going to die anyway.
Right.
Like, he's going to remember it. He's going to, you know, have this thought. But the outside world is still exactly the same.
So, I mean, the thing for me, and, you know, I know we try not to get too religious or you know, anything like that, but to me personally, it'd be a tough decision because, you know, knowing that, you know, you pass from this life, you go on to the next. Would there be any ramifications to that? Would, you know, my soul be kind of mixed up once, you know, I pass over? You know, like, there has to be some sort of consequence with doing this. And, like, is it...
It's interesting.
Like, is it an eternal consequence? Or is it just a matter of a short period of time? But, you know, it's such a hard question to answer because you don't know what the consequences are.
Yeah, well, because we all saw that it had more of an impact than we ever expected.
Yeah. Right.
It's a good question. I mean, without, you know, if someone wants to talk, share their thoughts, go for it.
It really dives into a really deep question of, you know, what continues on and... does that, you know, how do you, a lot of people who, you know, talk about reincarnation and stuff, you know, you don't really remember who you are or who you were, or, right. You know, will it have an impact? That's a great, you know, I mean, what if?
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of theology that goes far beyond what we can get into now.
Yeah.
You know, I definitely have some thoughts on that, but probably not for the group.
Yeah, and I kind of go along with Chris. Like, even without... Chris Clark, without even looking at the whole afterlife aspect, to me, like, it's, you know, you kind of want to keep your memories to yourself. It's a very personal thing. And even though, yes, it doesn't change the world around you, it doesn't change your actual life, changing these memories, to me, like, it still bothers me. It's still, you know, I mean... I don't think that I could make that decision, you know, to have this done to someone, is, you know, especially a loved one, you know, just because it just seems like, I mean, I don't know. I think that my mind has trouble separating the real life from the subconscious. You know what I mean? Like, to me, like, it was a little more, like, changing everything was a little more real than what it actually was, but I have trouble separating the two.
Yeah, I agree. I think what's interesting about this, though, is, like, if they continue, I think that Frank hits a good point where he says, you know, I'd like to do it right now. I don't want to wait till my deathbed. I think the assumption is that they wait till someone's on their deathbed, maybe even when they're in an unconscious sort of vegetable state.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then no one can ever say what the impact was or is. Yeah. Because we don't know. And if, you know, if there's this company that advertises that they can do this thing, and Johnny's on his before he dies, says, look, I want to, no matter what, when I go unconscious, I want you to call them.
Yeah.
Then you're going by the loved one's wishes. So I would say if someone asked me, and I knew that this thing was, it was nothing but good, you know, it could do, make them go easy and peacefully, then if they asked me, sure. I don't know if I'd make a decision for them.
Right. Yeah.
And if it was no harm, I mean, Chris Stanton touches on a good point. I mean, I don't, if there was no repercussions permanently, which I don't personally don't think there would be just based on what I know from the game, I would say, yeah, why not? I'd be like, yeah, I don't know what I would ask. I mean, the moon's pretty awesome, but I would be like, I don't know, take me to Disneyland. I don't know, I've never been there. I don't know, you know, like, I'd give them something easy.
Disney
like,
World.
I'd give them something easy, like, yeah, I want to go fishing. I don't know.
I think, something that you brought up is pretty interesting. I think, I mean, it's kind of morose or morbid, but I think a lot of people are at their, at stage in their life. I mean, the positive part for some people is that they are ready to go, and they're at peace with their life, and you know, for good or for bad, you know, they accept, you know, that this is the next thing and I'm ready to go. Now, and I don't think that was the case with Johnny. I don't think, you know, maybe that will help people, you know, like Johnny, who's not clearly quite sure of what, you know, what happened with his wife and what happened, you know, with a couple other things. It might have, you know, and he just knows he has this urge to go to the moon. So, it might be a good thing for those kind of people who aren't really ready to check out.
True. Good point. Anybody have any other thoughts on that topic before we move on?
Nope.
Cool. So do you guys think that the game writers, or the game itself, or the writers did a good job with taking the player through John's life, sort of backwards to the beginning, you know, memory by memory, allowing the players to understand him as a character. And then specifically, let's talk about also the characters in the game. So we have River, the doctors, etc. Do you think the game did a good job of translating their goals and their personalities?
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. I thought they really, they drew you into Johnny's life going backwards, and that was a good thing. And the other characters were pretty interesting as well, and they involved the two friends with the wife having a similar condition and all that, so and them being sort of lifelong friends, so.
Yeah, I definitely thought the doctors were very interesting, especially once you learned about Neil and his drug habit.
Yes, that's what I almost accidentally spoiled last week. I apologize. Yeah. Did everybody see that part?
I don't know.
Because in the initial playthrough, you cannot look at the drugs when she knocks them out of the car. You can just not look at them on the ground. And that's what I did my first
playthrough. Oh, I didn't even notice that.
I looked at them, yeah.
Yeah, if you don't look at them, you don't get any interaction with him. You don't learn about that.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Well, what happened? You mean the very beginning?
No. Okay, so when you go in Act 2, you go to the car to get something, and you find some painkillers of Neil's, and then you have a little confrontation with him where you're like, hey, are you addicted to painkillers? Yeah. And he's like, ha ha, no, I make jokes. And that's, that's really interesting bit of character development.
Is it the part where she goes down to get the squirrel or something?
I think so.
Oh, yeah,
she has to get the
painter from the car.
Because I don't remember, I don't think
I didn't even see that.
Yeah, it's super easy to miss. The car? Yeah, it's this tiny microscopic thing. Yeah. If you're not paying attention, you don't notice. Yeah. Like I missed it my first playthrough.
Yeah, and then at the very end, was it after the credits? Was it after the credits where it shows him taking the pills? Like, you know, he was having a headache. Yeah, he had a headache and he took the pills. And that's how it ended. And so I guess I'm hoping that in the second episode that they I'm hoping in the second episode that they definitely, you know.
Is that the thing that came rolling out of the car when Ava was digging through it?
Yes.
Okay.
I didn't even see that. I didn't even
I saw that, but I didn't think it was anything important.
It's so easy to miss.
Yeah. So Neil is addicted to painkillers. He has these terrible headaches, apparently. Okay, then.
So yeah. The other thing, too, is with the end, I almost got the feeling that one of them is in each other. It is in one of the other person's mind. Like, they're doing the whole dream thing in their mind.
Oh.
Ooh.
Like, it felt very, like, Matrix-y to me. Like, almost Inception. Like, who's in whose mind, and is this all actually real?
Man, you guys gotta all go play the DLC, like, right now, so I can talk about it with you.
Yeah, that was a great big speculation on that, yeah.
Well, there is that one part where, like, because, you know, when you're inside of Johnny's head, where the screen flashes red and they're saying, oh, we're almost out of time, almost out of time. And at the end, that happens again after you've already come out. Remember that?
Yep.
Oh, it's I didn't notice that.
Very Inception-y.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, there's like one point where Neil's just standing there and it's about to close. It's after the credits and the screen flashes red.
And then he gets a phone call.
He gets a phone call? I didn't even notice that part.
Yeah.
Isn't that where he took the pills? I think so. Yeah, okay.
They expand on that whole mystery a little bit in the DLC, so go play it and then talk to me about it.
All right. That's extra credit for next week.
We're gonna have a mini discussion before we start next week about the DLC then. Well. Okay.
Interesting. Wow. See, mind blown.
Yeah, this game is so many levels of like, what? You know, I love it. I love this game.
See, it was a game.
I know. Why don't you do the honors of digging us into question 7, because this is going to probably be an interesting one.
Okay, so do you think Eva's removing River from John's memory was the best decision, even though it worked in their favor towards the end? And how did this decision and the act of removing someone from someone's life, even if it's just on a subconscious level and not in the real world, make you feel? We know it worked, but what if something went wrong? What if Eva was wrong? So what do you guys think about that?
I kind of sided with Neil in that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a really hard decision to make.
It's really interesting because if I think about it, I dated the woman who's now my wife for a very long time before we got married, and there's a lot of time that I spent not doing homework when I should have, not spending time with my friends.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff that I could, that I, you know, gave up for that. If somebody took her out of my life, and then I did all those things, would I be happier or better off? I might have been more productive, but I don't know that I would be happier. Like, that was time that was valuable to me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It really... it really bothered me very deeply, that whole sequence. My mind had trouble separating the subconscious from the reality.
Yeah.
And it just hit me really hard. And because, like, I literally was, like, talking to myself like a crazy person, talking to the screen, and, like, you can't do that. You can't just remove someone from someone's life, even in their memories. Like, it really affected me. And that's probably the part in the game where I cried the most, because it just really affected me. And I didn't agree with it. Even though it worked in the end, there's so many things that could have gone wrong in the process to where it wouldn't have worked, you know, and Eva would have just been out of John's life. And yeah.
I mean, I guess my question is if River didn't come back into his life, would they reset, or would she just be like, well, oop, I kind of messed up in his life. He has the moon, but nobody, he loves him, you know?
Yeah, I don't think they would have reset.
No, I don't think that was their last shot.
It was pretty clear that was their last shot.
Yeah.
All right, well, I want to expand on this a little bit, because this is where I kind of got confused. Okay, first of all, I will say that I do not agree with Ava's decision at all to do that. and she didn't even consult with Neil, really. She just kind of did it. And I get it. Like, to them, it's a job. She's just trying to get the job done. They're under contract.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be some board of directors, whatever, that's going to give them crap for not doing it. But I think at what cost, right? And that's obviously what's been the whole question this whole time, is at what cost would you get the memory you want, whatever, right? So, I mean, I think of it this way. Like, Ava was basically gambling on this chance, this huge chance of taking what was very clearly a significant part of his life out of it. And even Neil was like, dude, you're an idiot. You can't do that. Like, it's River, you know? So I think I agree with all you guys. I mean, I don't in any way see that as... I mean, granted, again, like Steph said, it's harder to separate the reality from, you know, the dream world. And I think that's where the game is so successful. That's the whole point of it. But I just can't get past, like, you know, she was the glue holding him together.
Yeah.
I don't think that if Johnny was in a conscious state, knowing what he would have have had to give up, would have agreed to it. Nope. He would have said, heck no. Yeah. I don't care if I'll go on the moon. I just want her memory, you know? So.
Yeah.
Well, especially because, like, he didn't understand why he wanted to go to the moon, but it was obviously a subconscious desire for her. Like, that was his true desire, even if he didn't recognize that consciously.
Yeah. I did want to kind of get off on a quick question here, because I'm confused. So, at the end, you know, her whole decision to do that, Ava's decision to do that is based on, like, well, if we remove River, then, you know, we can go back and we can have this memory of him going to the moon and it can be more focused or whatever. I don't even know. She explained it, but I'm paraphrasing. So, but the thing is, when you see him in the beginning of the game, in the first memory, they ask him, why do you want to go to the moon? And he's like, oh, I don't know. Right? So he knows on some subconscious level that he wants to go to the moon, and it's usually because of we know it's because of when they met in the very beginning as kids at the carnival, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So am I right so far?
Yep. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So that being said, how would River being removed make him want to go to the moon anymore if the whole reason he wants to go to the moon in the first place is because of her?
But wasn't she removed from the time, like, around high school? Like, when he asked her out, wasn't she removed right then?
Oh, so, like,
also, by keeping the brother alive, he would still have his memories of her as a child.
Yeah.
I would think, anyway, because if his brother's not dead, he didn't need beta blockers.
Yeah.
So, if he still has a memory of her, then he has this, like, huge desire for the moon with an actual reason attached to it.
Yeah, from what I can tell, the removal started right when he asked her out to in high school, junior high school, or whatever, to the movies, because that's the first one they started with, and then just kind of went on from there.
That makes more sense.
Each time, so bringing more tears out of my eyes. Yeah,
but is it just like well, he was less focused on her and was able to just think about his future? Is that what?
Well, I think I think that, like, the desire to go to the moon was a desire for her, and so if she's not in his life, like, if she's in his life, he already has what the moon symbolizes. He's not going to work for it. But if she's gone, he's going to do whatever it takes to get her back.
Oh, see, that's that I like.
I didn't get that.
He has no drive to go to the moon because he was able to find her again.
The moon represents being with her.
Because basically, when they were sitting on that log in the middle of the forest there, they were like, all right, well, let's meet here next time, same time next year. And then he was like, well, if you're not here, then what are we going to do? It's like, well, we'll just meet on the moon.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I know. But it's so great. It's so... Freaking game's the best.
I didn't even pick up on that. Like, I just thought that it was just because he was able to focus more, you know, and I just didn't pick up on the reasoning behind wanting to go to the moon, and now I do. And
well, that makes sense now. That makes a lot more sense. So thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah. Oh, geez.
Yeah, that's awesome. Don't cry. Don't start crying again.
No, no, that's what this game is for. We're all just going to get in a circle and cry, and that's what we do.
Okay? Cry me a river. Oh. Okay.
Well, right. One side effect I had was more, you know, that, you know, Johnny was getting his wish, and you find out about the rabbits and, you know, the other stuff. And it's like, and it's,
oh my gosh,
boy, I felt really bad for River. I mean, she spent a whole life trying to get him to remember something.
I know.
You know, it's like, what about River? I'm saying at the end of the game.
Well, and she doesn't know why he doesn't remember. He just seemed kind of like a jerk, you know.
Yeah.
But there's like, there's a legit reason.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about that is, I think because of her condition, if you will, she didn't really take offense to it. She just was kind of like, she had a hard, I think because of her Asperger's, maybe had a hard time even seeing why he was, like, he, you know, I think the social cues weren't there.
Yeah.
So she just kept trying to encourage him, and she was very patient. Even on her deathbed, you see that she's just trying to, like, entice him to get it.
Oh, my God.
She's not frustrated at him, you know?
Yeah.
And that was, I mean, that clicked with me. As soon as they revealed that the moon was, like, the belly of the rabbit, I was just like, oh, God, please. I mean, I really didn't cry, but I was just like, wow, that was awesome. Like, that is so good.
Down your face, right.
Yes. Yeah. Weeping like a widow. As I told Steph earlier. No, I didn't weep like a widow. But, it definitely... I mean, I will say this. Going back to the crying thing. I have never, ever, 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 ever in my 25 years of gaming ever been moved even close to tears by a video game.
Yeah.
Ever.
I mean, I've cried during video games, but I just said this one was probably the one game that I cried the most significantly at, besides, like, I mean, I would almost say since, like, Final Fantasy VII, when I was in, like, junior high school, you know?
Yeah, there have been games that have made me feel emotion, but there's never been a game that made me literally cry tears until this game.
Right.
This game still, to this day, is the only game that has the tears award from me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's unbelievable. The Walking Dead games, are the Telltale ones, are very emotional. They definitely trigger emotion. Last of Us did it for sure.
Last of Us was a punch to the gut at the end.
it was sad, but it wasn't like, oh, I'm crying, you know. It was just tragic, you know.
Right.
Grim Fandango was the first game for me
that you cried at.
Grim Fandango for crying out loud.
Grim Fandango?
Yeah.
Are you crapping me right now?
Have you played it? You haven't played it all the way through, though.
I haven't played it. I need to play it, obviously.
Yeah, now I really want to play it.
I know, man. What the heck?
Chris has high praise for this game.
He does. It's a good game. I only played a little bit of it, but
yeah. There's I think it's in year 3 or 4. Is where
year. Like the chapter of the game?
Well, the chapters are broken up into years.
Oh, okay.
So.
Wow.
Which is kind of weird because it's the land of the dead and it's all of eternity, so it's weird that they're using years as a frame of counting measures. So, but I don't question it.
And it's on sale now, guys. Only $3.74 on Steam.
Oh, nice.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, buy it. It's a good game.
Grim Fandango's how much?
$3.74.
Oh my god.
Oh, it's probably because Day of the Tentacle came out.
Oh, yes. I can't wait to get that
game. I just bought it.
Did you?
I did. I'm done.
How much was it?
$3.74.
Oh, I thought you meant Day of the Tentacle. Yeah, not Day of the Tentacle.
No.
Sorry. Yeah.
Whoops. All right, well.
I guess we can discuss that game.
Getting back on track here.
Yeah, we'll get back on track here. I think... This is another one that's kind of hits close to home, I guess. I mean, we may have already answered this somewhat, but let's kind of drill down a little more and say, if you knew that an important person in your life was going to have a tragic end, so specifically a tragic end, would you choose to reset your life and not know them to spare yourself the pain? So you can't alter their life at all. But if you could choose to go back and erase those memories and forget it,
Nope.
Start over
no.
again.
No.
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 Really? Yeah. Even if you knew they were going to just die and be habitated in a car wreck, you would still.
I mean, go but you still it. You still have all the memories leading up to it. You yeah. still have and I mean, everything.
Anybody significantly significant enough to me that I would want to that I couldn't handle the pain would be somebody who my life would be much poorer without
exactly.
having.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would rather have a life full of painful missing them than have just yeah. sort of this dreary, boring life. You know.
Yeah.
Do you think you'd always be thinking about it though? Like coming up.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but the memories of all of the fun you had and all the good times would far outweigh. I mean, if I had the choice of, you know, having, you know, losing someone, but also having these great memories of the time that yeah. they were alive, yeah. I would so take it. I mean, I wouldn't yeah. change that at all.
Interesting.
How about you, Chris?
You know, I don't know. I think I think it's one of these worldview questions, and I think that I'm, to be honest, I'm a little bit on the fence because I still question. I mean, and this I'm kind of opening up here, so bear with me a little bit, but and you know, don't judge me. But I think there are. Like I shared about my grandfather one time and how I watched my grandmother mm-hmm. go through that and wondered like why on earth you'd mm-hmm. want to ever get married to someone only to lose them. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all know death's a part of life, and I mean, I have my beliefs and things like that, but I still struggle with it. I still struggle with this idea that like kind of the cynicism that what's the mm-hmm. point, you know? And so I wrestle with that all the time, and I'm like, well. But it is, in a way, even when I was asking the question, it kind of just occurred to me that it's a little bit selfish to... I mean, the person's still going to die.
Mm-hmm.
I can't change their life. I'm simply choosing to avoid pain at the cost of maybe getting to know someone who is going to change my life.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe I will change theirs.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. I think that it's just a place where I'm at right now where I'm kind of like, oh, I would totally just do it because I don't want to feel hurt because I've been hurt a lot in my life and yeah. for various ways. We all have. But I think it's just depending on maybe the amount of hurt you've endured or what caused it,
yeah.
it can kind of jade you a little bit. And I think you can just become cynical, and I think that's kind of I'm coming out of that, but I'm kind of like I don't know. I mean, what's the point? You know, is it really worth getting married and having all these years and years and years together, and then one person just all of a sudden, poof, they're gone? You know.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's rough. It's yeah.
That is the point, actually. That you know, you commit yourself to someone else with that knowledge that you know, one of us is going to leave and leave the other one,
yeah,
alone, and knowing that, it's you're committing to that person saying.
Yeah,
I take that as part of the deal.
You know, I recently had a friend in the family. Him and his wife were in their late 80s, I think, and his wife recently died. They had been married for 60-some years. And I think that if you would ask him that question on, you know, whether, you know, her death was worth and the pain he had to go through, worth the 60-some years of marriage and everything that happened... I think that he would say definitely.
Yeah. I think there's another angle to this, which it's a rabbit hole we don't have to go down, but I'm just saying like, you know, the odds of like, okay, say you're not married for 60 years, say you're married for 4 months, you know, it happens.
I think so.
Granted, you don't have as many memories or whatever, but it's kind of like this, you've gone through all this, you know, it's unexpected and it's tragic, you know?
Yeah.
I think what it comes down to is just like this is somebody who's changed your life, and
yeah.
would you rather have the pain and have the life change, or would you rather have no pain and
right.
go back to how you were before you were changed?
Right.
What's more valuable yeah. to you?
Exactly.
Well, I think once you start running from pain, it becomes easier, but you also become more isolated.
Mm-hmm.
Like I noticed that in my own life, you isolate yourself because you're afraid of being hurt, and what happens is you just become a shell of a human being.
Absolutely.
So pain really isn't, you can't have joy without pain. So you kind of have to go through it as much as it sucks. Yeah. I mean, you just, and as much as it is, seems so dark and bleak and hopeless at times, what more is, like, if you don't have it, you'd never know real joy.
Yeah.
Yes. Right? Yep. And I imagine, I guess the easiest way to answer that question is imagining if you had to tell the other, your significant other, before they died, oh, by the way, I'm going to erase your memory because it's going to cause me too much pain. I don't think that would go over too well.
No.
You get the final, like, death stare from your spouse.
Nope. Because you would die. You'd probably die right then.
Exactly. Like, not so fast. I'm going to take you out.
Too bad, sucker.
I can totally see that. That's a funny point, yeah. All right, well, we're almost done, so let's get on to the last question, Steph. You want to ask question number 9?
In the replaced memories, we see John getting a job at NASA and River excelling right there along beside him. Even though this all takes place in John's memories or subconsciousness, do you think that utilizing herself in that way would help River with her condition? Or would her condition, you know, if you're thinking of in a real sense, would her condition inhibit her from ever even making it that far? And also, does the life portrayed for River and John here seem more fulfilled than the life that actually was? Why or why not?
See, I almost got the feeling that in this version of reality that Johnny was living, that River did not have the condition she did. Because he did not have the memory of her diagnosis. So she was more, I guess, more normal than if he went through the real memories.
Yeah.
So that's what I got out of it, so.
Yeah.
Sort of glossed over that. You don't really, yeah. I think Asperger's might help in a scientific field, believe it or not. I mean, she has near photographic memory, and
yeah, I thought the same thing, though. I wondered if it would have affected her. But you know, it's interesting. I didn't even realize till just now that it's just his memory, so it doesn't even matter. Who cares?
Right.
Like, it's just like, really. It's just, I don't mean to shut down the question. What I'm saying is, like, it's, again, we go back to that, the mastermind who wrote this game and made us not understand the difference between his memories and
real. I can't do it.
Right. No, I'll wait up until the end. I mean, if it was, you know, I mean, it's amazing. The whole game takes place in a bedroom with a guy unconscious.
Yeah. Like, even now, thinking back on it, knowing everything that I do, I'm still like, but, you know, I keep wanting... I keep wanting to make you know, to rationalize it, even though it is just his memories, just his dreams. But yeah, it's really hard for me to do, to differentiate the two. So do you guys think that the life that was portrayed by River and John here in his dream world, in his subconscious, was more fulfilled than it actually was?
That's a tough one.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think that it was necessarily more fulfilled, but just his last memory, I guess it erased, because his last memories before the scientist, doctor people come, is having 2 or 3 years with his wife having died because she wouldn't have treatment. And that's not a very happy ending to your life, whereas... In this, his last memory is holding hands with the love of his life as they go to the moon. So I think that...
True.
I don't know that one is more fulfilled than the other, but one's a better last moment.
True.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yep.
Anybody have any final thoughts before we move on? All right, we're going to like we always do when we finish a game, we're going to go around and just kind of give final thoughts, you know, brief. I know we've already talked about it extensively, but if you have anything you want to just say, just to kind of encapsulate your experience with the game, and then we're going to rate the game out of 10, 10 being the best, and we'll talk about Oxenfree. So we'll just go down the line. We'll start with Chris Clark.
Okay. So I personally, this is one of my favorite games, and I think as far as when people, you know, bring up, can video games be art? Can they be considered more than just, you know, pew pew, you're dead, waste of time? This is the example that I think is the best thing to point to as video games being art. I think it is extraordinarily well written. I think it is extraordinarily good at connecting with people on an emotional and very real level,
mm-hmm.
and really communicating, I mean, as art is supposed to, communicating something about the human experience. And so I think that this game is, as far as games I have played, which I've played quite a few stupid artsy games, this is probably the best artsy game and best example of gaming as art. Mm-hmm. And I would give it a 10 out of 10 for that reason, because it's the best that I've played in this area.
10 out of 10. Awesome.
Yeah, love it. It's so good.
Franco?
It's a good example of, like I was thinking, this is almost like the flip side of Transistor, where Transistor had some very interesting gameplay mechanics,
mm-hmm.
but was failing in a game and a story mode, I should say.
Yeah.
And this is almost the flip side, where it's, you know, not exactly the most action packed game, but its story way over, you know, compensates for that. And it shows you how important the story can be to a game. You almost don't even have to have a game if you have a great story. So based on that, I'm going to be unpopular. 9.5, but I got to knock it down to a 9 for lack of game.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Doobie-doo.
So, as I've said before, this was a great interactive story. I wish there was some more actual gameplay in it. And I feel like that was the biggest lacking thing with this game. And it just tried to throw in those simple little puzzles, and then you had the void section when you're walking down the school hallway, and
yeah.
You know, that it's like it's almost a little too late at that point when they try and throw in actual gameplay elements into this thing, where you've already invested, I don't know, maybe like 2 or 3 hours into it. So yeah. But the story is what carries this game. It's a good story. It definitely makes you think. Definitely makes you think what you would do if you had the option. And I give it an 8 out of 10.
Okay.
Right. Def.
This game was quite the surprise to me. I think I said that last week. I wasn't expecting too much from it, other than just what people had said about the story. And I thought, okay, well, it has a good story. You know, I wasn't expecting it quite the level that it was. And this game made me feel on so many levels. It's ridiculous. I just, you know, the story was amazing. You know, it doesn't bother me that there wasn't that much gameplay. Since the story was as amazing, was as freaking amazing as it was. If the story had been lacking any, you know, in any way, I probably would have, you know, you would have needed that gameplay to balance it out. But I think the story in itself was enough. And, you know, this game could have been $20 or $25 and it still would have been worth it, you know? And, yeah, so I thoroughly enjoyed it. The characters, the world was very immersive, you know, even for an 8-bit sprite game. And, yeah, so I'm going to give it a 9.5 out of 10.
Very good. It was weird going last, because I'm like, what do I say? But, I mean, I agree with everything everyone said. I think, for me, normally I would be complaining about the lack of gameplay like I did in Life is Strange. I just felt like that. Oddly enough, I felt like Life is Strange dragged way more than this game. Of course, that was a 12-hour game, right? This is only a 4-hour game.
Yeah.
But I loved it. I from the moment you go in that house, I mean, and see that whole thing going down for the first time, it's like I just was brought right in. I couldn't look away. You know, I wanted to keep playing. And the story was gripping. It was very well written, which I always appreciate a good story, and I always appreciate well fleshed out characters that are believable. That's huge for me. And everybody was very, very relatable and believable. Gameplay, we all know, was just basically non-existent. Didn't really matter. In fact, I felt like in later in the levels where it became gameplay, I was kind of like, I don't really, why is this here? I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I get it. And it didn't really throw it off. I guess there were just certain very, very small parts for me where it kind of dragged, or it kind of became, I got snagged on something. I didn't really know what the heck I was supposed to do. And for that reason, I go down a half a point and give it a 9.5.
Okay.
That's it. I have no complaints other than that.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Wow.
Very good.
There you go. All right. There you go. Anybody, anything else they want to share before we move?
Yeah, go buy Grim Fandango.
Just did.
Already done it, dude.
That's hilarious. All right, so, real quick, for Oxenfree. Okay, so the game, it's a little bit tricky to gauge, like, where you should and shouldn't stop, because the way it works is there's a couple parts in the beginning, at least in the first segment we'll play, where you can choose to do one thing or the other first. Like, you don't have to, it's not very linear. So your gameplay might vary slightly, but this is how we're going to do. I believe that the game's sort of broken down into time. So when you first start, it'll tell you what time it is on the screen. It'll be like, you know, 8 p.m. or whatever.
Uh-huh.
When we get to 2 a.m., stop.
Okay.
2 a.m. stop.
Yeah, 2 a.m. stop. It'll flash on the screen. It's actually, like, as soon as it comes up on the screen, it's like a piece of dialogue, and it's kind of going on and on while you're standing there. You can listen to the dialogue, then quit, or you can quit then. It basically, the game auto-saves every time it transitions to another, like, time frame.
Oh, okay.
You'll see it saving. And I think that this game, I've only played the first 2 hours, and I'm going to, you know, obviously, so it's about 2 hours where you land at 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
I like it because it's going to be a little bit different for us, not this, like, deep, like, emotional game that we keep choosing. Mm-hmm. It's very fun. It is creepy and kind of, you know, engaging, but it's very lighthearted and kind of whimsical. So I'm excited for us to talk about it, and I'm really excited for you guys to play. I think you're all going to love it. I'm loving it so far. So, yeah, stop at 2 a.m., and then we'll meet next week.
About how long do you think that takes?
It took me – I played a – I would say I played that just under 2 hours. It was like barely 2 hours. I stopped there only because I had probably another 15 minutes of my 2 hour mark, but I didn't know how much further it was going to take me, so I just stopped.
Okay.
So there you go. All right. Okay. Thanks, everybody. Good discussion.
That was great.
Thanks, guys. Yep. See you next week.
Take care, everybody.
Yep.
All right.
Bye.